November 10th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight we'll be talking about awesome webcomics.
Dun, dun, dun. Let's do this.
Let's do this.
Okay.
So, I'm going to get on the train to go home today, right?
Yeah.
And there's always these two guys. I sometimes pass them, and they have like a little tiny wooden chess portable thingy. And they kind of put it on their laps, and they sit in the seats facing each other, and they play chess.
Is it magnetic?
I don't know. It could be. If it is, it's like secretly magnetic. But they keep it balanced pretty well. It's not an unstable set.
Yeah, it's not that bad of a train, yeah. So.
But anyway, that's not the point. The point is that when I got on the train today, I sat in the little thing across from them. You know.
Uh-huh.
And I heard one guy talking, and he was talking, I think, I didn't hear the whole thing, about the pick three lottery. So, where you pick three numbers, and then you win a prize.
Yeah.
And he was saying, if one day it's like 354, and the next day it's like 356, and the next day it's 358, what are the odds it's going to be 359 on the fourth day? I'm just sitting there like, the same, one out of 999, the same it is every single day. It doesn't, oh my god, someone needs to take a statistics class, oh my god.
So your story is basically that a lot of people are real bad at statistics. That's the reason the lottery exists.
But we need to fix, oh my god. You should be sent immediately back to elementary school if anyone hears you saying those sorts of things in public.
Here's the problem with that. If people all knew statistics, there wouldn't be any more lottery.
That's
good.
Then
there wouldn't be any more money for schools because we all pay for our schools through the lottery taxes.
Well, you know, with all these people that we'd send back to school because they were too dumb and they, you know, joined the lottery or played
the lottery. So the schools would need even more money.
Well, no, they would get the money from all these dumb people who had to go there because they would go there and it would suck for them and they would put money into it.
What do you mean they would put money into it? They wouldn't. They'd coast through and then they'd leave.
How about this? If we make an enlightened despotism, we have a lottery. And there's a law. If you ever buy a lottery ticket, you are sentenced to school that you must pay for double price.
Uh-huh.
So that way you have to pay for your own reschooling as well as the schooling of someone else for being dumb.
Or, you know, we could just reform the public school system so these things don't happen anymore.
But what about the people who are already dumb? Like this guy. I mean, he seemed like a smart guy. You know, he's playing chess. And the other things he was saying, he seemed like a cool, happening kind of guy, except he just didn't understand statistics.
Well, why didn't you do your part and fix that right then?
Because I was busy playing with my new digital camera.
So Sony's been doing some good, but I don't know if it outweighed the bad.
Wait. Hasn't Sony been doing just all bad lately?
No, they did one good. They joined this Linux alliance with IBM.
Wait. Every Linux alliance so far has been poop.
Well, let's see. This is IBM, Sony, and Philips. It's a Linux adoption group, and they're trying to get people to use Linux.
Huh. Oh, yeah, those are three companies that don't like Microsoft.
It's mostly a legal protection racket, as in, don't worry, we vouch for the stuff being legal, so you won't get sued. You can use OSS.
That's like IBM saying, don't worry, we've already won the SEO case. Give us your money, and we'll give you nothing.
You know what? IBM's already won the SEO case, as far
that's
as
the
I'm
point,
concerned.
But they're, you know, because the that's probably why IBM's keeping the SEO case not done yet, is so that they can get money out of people and basically sell them nothing.
But we don't need to give them money. This group just is vouching for Linux, basically.
They'll do it whether you give them money or not?
As best I can tell. It's
so what if I make
it's one of those vague industry initiatives that doesn't actually do anything.
So it's just an excuse to make a press release with the words Linux, IBM, Sony, and Philips in it.
Something like that.
Okay.
Because it didn't really take away from the fact that not only did Sony release a horrible rootkit, not only does it also infect Macs, not only do if you call them to get the uninstaller, does the uninstaller install an even worse one, but someone has already exploited this thing in the wild, and there's now a Trojan.
Well, they exploited it to cheat at World of Warcraft.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I can't really blame you for avoiding the grind.
Yeah.
And beating the Chinese gold farmers.
Yeah. Wonder how many people are going to be selling some level 60 characters on eBay right
now.
I
heard that the next Diablo is going to be an MMO. Wait till we see what goes on there.
Oh, God. Remember Battle.net?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's actually still Battle.net is what they call all the Blizzard online stuff.
I thought it'd be really cool, and I logged on.
It's kind of like Steam of Blizzard.
And the guy had every item in the game. and I asked him if I could have some, and he gave me every item in the game. And then I realized that I could just make copies of every item in the game, and I'd never play it again.
Yep.
But this Trojan, it's kind of cool, because it preys on the vanity of idiots. It comes as an email attachment in an email that says, we're some sports magazine, or we're some business magazine, and we want to use your picture. So could you please confirm that this is a picture of you?
Oh, great.
Yeah.
They open the attachment, and then bam!
Bam! Dollar sys dollars files all over your system.
Ah, that's how it goes, eh?
Yeah. It doesn't use the Trojan that's already installed. They must have bought the CD, gotten the Trojan out of it, and now they're using it in their own malware.
See, the thing is, Sony didn't make the Trojan. They just kind of bought it from this British company.
Yeah, and I wonder, I mean...
The Mac one is actually a different one that they also bought, and they put them both on all the CDs.
Who thought this was a good idea?
Some company that was making DRM.
No, I mean, who in Sony thought it was a good idea to poison the only legitimate paying customers they had?
Well, the thing is, they didn't... I don't think they knew. I think they were just saying, hey, let's buy DRM. Let's look at the DRM solutions. And this company came to them and said, our DRM is pretty much unbeatable. And Sony said, okay.
Yeah, they probably didn't look at it too hard.
And probably, even if they looked at it too hard, you think they know what they're looking at?
You
think anyone at
Sony
that was looking at this is as competent as we are?
Someone at Sony has to know how to code. Someone at Sony had to have said, hey, this is a bad idea.
Even so, this thing has been in the wild for like months and months and months, and no one found it until very recently when the Rootkit Revealer guy, the guy who makes Rootkit Revealer, the expert on rootkits, found it randomly.
You know why I think that was? No one who knows about computers buys CDs anymore.
Could be.
So, no, anyone who bought... I mean, the list of CDs includes such wonderful hits as Ricky Martin.
Who's that?
Livin' La Vida Loca.
What's that?
Wow, you're more divorced from pop culture than I am. I didn't think that could be.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Hot, 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 or cold? It's hot, hot, hot.
That was from SNL, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a spoof on Ricky Martin.
Oh, alrighty then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Pop Culture there.
All right. I thought it was funny because the guy said hot, hot, hot. I didn't know they were making fun of anybody.
Wow.
So, you know that video game law in Michigan that was like, oh, if you sell, you know, bad video games, we'll fine you and stuff and maybe even send you to prison.
Yeah, the law that made me kind of ashamed of my home state.
So some judge came around and said, hey, I think there'd be some chilling effects up there.
Ooh.
And put a stop to that. He didn't get rid of the law, but he said, we can't be enforcing this law yet until we see some court lookings.
So he basically isn't letting the law get passed until they come up with a way to get rid of the law.
Well, it's passed, but he basically said this law can't be enforced, and it's kind of like a hold. Like you put someone on hold on the phone.
Huh. I wonder if he's just going to hang up when no one's looking.
You know what? I got a theory.
Yeah?
I think this judge is a gamer.
You know, I wouldn't put it that far out. We're getting to the point where the first gamers, I mean the real gamers, the hardcore gamers, are in industries and are doing things other than gaming.
Yep.
You know, there's going to be a day someday when someone from the Nintendo generation is president of the United States of America.
There has to be, because you can only be president for 8 years. And, you know, eventually, someone who was born between, you know, 1980 and 1990... will be up for election, and your choice will be between Nintendo player and Nintendo player.
Maybe Sega kid.
No, who had a Sega Master System? He'd have to be like a Brazilian import, because that's what they had, the Sega Master System.
Man, I remember when I was in parochial school way, way back when I was a little kid, and everyone had a Nintendo, but all the dumb kids had Segas.
Oh, in my town it wasn't that way.
Huh? I mean, one kid had a Nintendo jacket, and he was the coolest kid.
Where'd he get a Nintendo jacket from in those days?
I think his mom made it.
Oh, okay, that's all right. But when in the 8-bit era, everyone had NES, and some cool kids had Ataris, but they also had NESs.
Yep.
I had an Atari 2600, but it broke.
I had an Atari 7800, and I had an Intellivision 2 that my grandma bought.
But, you know, after the NES, it was either SNES or Genesis, because no one could afford both of them. And, you know, no one was smart enough to hook up both to the TV. So, you know, some kids bought SNES and some kids bought Genesis. And, you know, there were some kids, you know, they would fight. They'd be like, oh, this one's better, this one's better. But anyway, everyone played both of them pretty much equally.
See, I didn't know anyone who had a Genesis, and I didn't know anyone who knew anyone who had a Genesis. Oh. The kids who had Genesises were kids on the other side of the school that none of us ever talked to.
Yeah. We would, you know, you'd see if you had a bunch of friends with SNESs, you would usually buy a Genesis. That way you could get more games going on.
Yeah, but we had enough
with
the NES.
But sometimes the logic was different. Sometimes the logic was if your friends have SNES, your close friends have SNESs, the ones you trust, you get the same so you could trade games. And the semi-distant friends, you would get different so that you could play the other games.
You know, one time I traded Hydlide for Mega Man 3.
You just ripped someone off real bad.
Yeah, he came to my door like 15 minutes later. And I want my game back. Give it back. And I wouldn't open the door and I kept it.
Yeah, one time I traded this kid Prince of Persia for the Sega Genesis for, I think, Urban Strike, the helicopter game.
Ah.
You know, and Prince of Persia was on a bunch of different systems, so I didn't really care. But we were supposed to trade back. I never saw that kid again. And, you know, I didn't beat Urban Strike. So.
Wasn't that good a game?
No. But I think I also got an NHL game out of the deal. But who needed that? It wasn't as good as
ice hockey
or anything else.
Blades of Steel.
And then we eventually got NHL 99 for the N64, which is really good.
We had that for the PC.
Ah.
Barely ran on our computer. Oh, my God.
I had the demo for the PC. It ran on my Pentium 3450.
Ah.
See, everyone always says, oh, put on your tinfoil hat.
Yep, wrap tinfoil around your house.
Yeah, it'll prevent, you know, the government from spying on you and the radio signals getting in and out and blah.
Too bad it'll actually, magnify?
Yeah, they tested some tinfoil hats and they sent some, you know, I think 2.4 gigahertz frequency signals at you. And apparently the tinfoil hat increased the signals and did not protect you at all.
Outstanding.
I think you would actually need, like, a real Faraday cage helmet to,
But a Faraday cage has to be a complete sphere.
Yeah, so if it comes in through your neck, you're not doing too well.
Yeah. I guess you could just roll around in a ball like in American Gladiators for the rest of your life.
Dude, that'd be freaking sweet.
I wonder if we could make a market for those. We could sell them to those conspiracy
I wonder what
theorists.
Happened to the American Gladiators set. It should totally be on eBay. I would buy the freaking, the one where they shoot the tennis balls. I would buy all the equipment from that.
You know what? I would play that every day.
Yeah. Screw paintball and airsoft.
You know what? I get to be the guy in the tower.
No, I think we have to take turns.
Nah, I think I always get to be the guy in the tower.
All right, that's fine. Because you know what? Every time I watch that show, the guy who was on the ground, you knew he could win so easily. He was just always dumb when he lost.
Yeah, like he'd always... Like, he'd miss with every gun until he got right up to the end. He'd have to throw the tennis balls at it.
Yeah, and he would actually throw all three tennis balls. I'd be like, you're not going to win with the tennis balls. Just run for the exit. You'll get some points. You know? And the thing is, they had the one weapon, the rocket, with the little guard bit.
Yep.
That rocket can hit so easily. These people sucked.
Because they were so afraid of getting hit by the ball, but the rocket had a shield on it. It would block the ball.
The other thing is, one time a guy kept popping out and made the gladiator shoot all the tennis balls. And then he was just like, he walked right up and shot the rocket at the target.
Because most of the time, they got eliminated. And I remember if you got eliminated, you got no points.
Yep.
If you made it to the end, even if it took you the maximum time, you got some points.
Yep. So you just make to the end.
Yeah. I would have been great on that show, except for all the other events that require speed, strength, and stamina.
Yeah. You know what definitely won't protect you from those tennis balls?
Tinfoil hat?
Yeah.
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 Maybe we should start a market in Saran Wrap face masks. That'll solve the conspiracy theory problem.
That'll solve the guy who don't know the statistics problem.
So it's time for the thing of the day.
I thought we weren't going to make a little music for that.
Well, we haven't done it yet.
You're so lazy.
So what is your thing of the day?
So I went onto the internet this morning and I saw...
Oh, you went on the internet this morning.
I saw Doom running on the iPod Nano. Now,
wait, Doom. Doom or Doom 2?
Doom 1.
Doom 1.
The whole thing.
How now, do you control it on the iPod Nano?
Well, I guess you steer left and right with the wheel, And then I guess you...
So how do I strafe, change weapons, shoot, and open doors?
You can't... I don't think you can do all those things easily.
I
think there's no strafing. You pretty much turn left and right by going left and right. And I think you go forward by pushing up. You shoot by pushing the middle button. And you open doors, I think, maybe...
You realize
you
without being able
button.
To strafe, it's pretty much impossible to get more than 2.5 levels into Doom.
I think you play it on, Don't Hurt Me. I guess you could play it on Nightmare, but the idea isn't the cool, awesome controls. The idea is that you're playing Doom on an iPod Nano.
So, did you install it on your iPod Nano?
Well, the way it works is you have to install iPod Linux and then Doom, right?
Uh-huh.
Now, see, the directions seem pretty easy. It was get this executable Windows thing, run it, and it installs Linux on your Nano. And then just put the Doom folder on your Nano.
So, that didn't work?
Well, I read and I thought I read the whole thing. And, I mean, they had a picture of Doom running on the Nano. And the directions on the Doom for Nano website was install iPod Linux, copy Doom. So I went and I got the executable to install iPod Linux and ran it. But little did I realize that the latest stable version does not support the Nano. They must use a nightly build or done something else tricky that they didn't explain at all. So I found out what happens when you screw up the firmware on your Nano.
It doesn't work?
Well, it turns on. You get the little black apple that says, I'm booting, right? And then you get the this folder with an exclamation point that says, www.apple.com/iPod/support.
That
it tells
is
you
awesome.
The URL for the support site. So then I'm like, all right, I broke it. I'll just use the iPod updater to restore the firmware. Apparently, because the firmware was somewhat bork that I had put on there, it wasn't so easy to replace it. I eventually had to restart the computer, restart the iPod service, run the updater, then plug in the iPod, then wait as the computer went crazy, then click the restore button, then wait as it went crazy again.
So,
it was just...
Did you figure this out on your own, or was there some forum somewhere where someone said, I borked my iPod?
No, I had to figure it out. Well, I knew to restore. That was obvious.
Yeah.
Because it just restores to the real
but
Apple firmware.
Restore didn't work.
Restore didn't work like 5 times. I just had to keep messing with it. And if that didn't work, I would have had to go to the Apple store.
Don't you do a work at work?
This was during my little breaky bit.
Yeah, your breaky bit.
Yeah.
Oh, well. My thing of the day... Usually I'm not one to say this, it's so much cooler than your thing of the day. It's
what could be cooler than Doom on a music
player? In
fact, player?
This is one of the coolest things I've seen on the internet in a long time.
It can't be that cool.
So humans haven't made anything like the Great Pyramids in a long time.
Ever.
Yeah, what, you're saying aliens made the Great Pyramids?
No, I guess, yeah, but not. You know what I mean.
Yeah. We have not really undertaken such massive works.
Oh, we made Rome.
Rome wasn't really a large, semi-useless thing to convey information. It was more of a city full of people.
We made big buildings.
Yeah. But anyway.
Rockets.
Consider how would we as a civilization convey culturally independent information that can be understood and experienced by possibly unknown or primitive cultures 5, 10, 15,000 years from now, and why would we want to?
Well, I don't know why we'd want to, but we could use HD Rosetta.
Yeah, but we're talking about technologically primitive, possibly.
We could make a box that has some audio recorded and a speaker. And
audio, because they'll speak the same languages 10,000 years from
now.
Who
says it has to
today.
Be language? It could just be noises.
All right, so we have a moo, and then a bark, and then a
you know those
noise.
Things you turn it upside down and it goes meh.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll convey the gestalt of our civilization.
How about a self powered video player where if anyone comes near it, it plays video.
Self powered that'll somehow not be taken apart and sold for scrap sometime during those 10 or 20,000 years.
We'll hide it in it with like a projector. In
all right,
a cave.
All right. So anyway. Back to the other point you made of why would we want to? Well, say we start using nuclear power more than we do now, and we start generating a lot of nuclear waste.
All right.
So we're going to have to start building deep underground storage facilities to contain it.
Well, you already determined that would be perfectly safe.
Yeah, unless someone drills there or digs it up or starts, like, tapping into the well water that goes right through it.
Yeah, that would be bad.
So, this is an actual study, and there's a lot more to this document than I have in my link today. But, basically, it's a bunch of scientists and researchers talking about how can you convey universally to intelligent beings that there is something bad here that you don't want to unearth. Like, think about in the movies where there, or in D&D, when there's a demon that some ancient civilization buried somewhere, and they put up, like, the crazy warnings and the spell barriers and all the stuff to keep you out and to warn you that something's bad's here, until the main character of a movie wanders in and accidentally releases it.
It's so obvious. You just put some traps and you put some things that are ominous.
No, because traps don't work. Traps tell people, there's something valuable here. I am going to bypass the traps and try to get to it. And traps don't work forever.
You put things that are all too enticing.
See, actually, the conclusions, I mean, this paper is really interesting, and I can't really get into all the details without making a whole podcast about it. So you're really going to have to follow this link, because it's really neat. But basically, they talk about how you could do this, how you could make this gestalt, this system of information that, as a whole, will let people know that this is a bad place and you don't want to be here, while at the same time propagating itself and being resistant to people, say, scavenging it for spare parts or masonry or making a monument to it because they think it's something like the pyramids. And it talks about different things like they break up the types of different information you can convey to people into four levels. Level one is there's something man-made here. Probably the simplest message in the world. What is here is not natural.
Mm-hmm.
Level two is whatever is here is dangerous. It was repulsive to us as a society, and you do not want it. There is no item of value here. This is a non-place.
A non-place?
A non-place. A place that you should not be.
It's not a place.
Level three should be an explanation in some sort of language, probably whatever language is most common, maybe multiple languages, that would hopefully be translated by people in the future, that explains exactly what it is. This is a horrible nuclear waste burial site. It was built in the year blah, blah, blah. It is this big, whatever. Level four information is, here are the schematics and technical diagrams of all the crap we buried under here and exactly how dangerous it is and when we think it won't be dangerous anymore. And to skip a bit, because I could talk about this forever, I read the whole thing and it's really cool, they came up with a lot of ideas on how to convey these messages. And the basic concept is that, in addition to having bits of information around, they want the area to be inhabitable and ominous. So these architects came up with ways to have, like, horrible non-Euclidean-looking jagged spikes coming out of the ground made of, like, basalt. Or horrible Cthulhu-looking cities that just make you feel bad. Like, something's bad here and I shouldn't be here. These are, like, things out of movies.
See, but that makes people feel bad. How do we know that some aliens won't feel good? Like, well, hey, look, this is obviously the only inhabitable part of this damn planet.
Well, actually, they get into that because they show such things as you can't just have a big warning that says, warning, radiation. Because a civilization might be standing there and to whip out a Geiger counter and, hey, there's no radiation. That sign's BS. They don't know that the radiation is buried very deep, and then 5,000 years later, they dig down to get something and horrible radiation comes out. So they tried to come up with universal ideas of, this is a dangerous place. Menacing earthworks. Not using, like, obelisks or pyramids or anything that looks good. They want things to be pretty, but not good-looking. They want to convey the message that this is something repulsive. And, yeah, I really shouldn't talk more about it, because other than there's a funny picture of a guy getting radiation on him and then falling over dying, and there's happy trees next to him.
Why don't they just put some poison gas there, like.
See, that's one of the things they said is that you can't keep people out because we can guarantee, like the pyramids. The pyramids were designed to keep people out. Then technology improved, people found the pyramids, and they broke themselves in and saw what was up.
Just put something that smells bad.
That'll last 10,000 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we have that technology.
Well, that's what we got to get working on.
What, we made a giant pyramid of dead dogs and skunks?
I'll tell you what, if we did that, it'd be a lot cooler than this story.
Really, read the article, because the pictures are neat, the conclusions they make are neat, and this is probably one of the most forward-thinking projects I've ever seen mankind in recent history engage upon.
It's neat and it's forward thinking, but I don't think it's that cool.
If you read this article, I think you'll think it is.
Nah.
This is the closest to a real yeah we're ever going to get.
But you know what's good about these kind of things is, like, when you run out of stuff to talk about, that's the kind of stuff you could just keep talking about for, like, hours if you're a bunch of nerds.
Yeah, like when we debate the various ways magic works in Dungeons & Dragons games.
No, it's nothing like that.
Yeah, because that's what Pete and Katsu and I were doing not too long ago. Mostly Pete and Katsu.
Good job.
So, webcomics.
Oh, yeah. Read them every day.
Yeah, every morning I get up and I read about 12 different webcomics.
I read like 7 because I have standards too high.
Well, also because a lot of webcomics we used to read have fallen by the wayside because their authors stopped updating them.
And a lot of them we used to read are not funny, and it just took so long to finally delete the bookmark.
See, I'm sorry, but Bob and George was never funny.
It was funny. It was Flash Man, and the joke was that he flashed people. He had a trench coat. It was funny.
That wasn't funny at all.
That was funny.
That was perhaps one of the lamest jokes I've ever heard in my life.
I like it.
Yeah, that speaks very highly of your character and sense of humor.
I like flashing.
Flash! Oh, God.
So, you know, over time, we've, you know, added and removed a whole lot of webcomics.
Yep, one webcomic we read for a long time, and then the author stopped writing it and disappeared. And then he reappeared and asked for money. And he said if he got enough money, he'd start the comic again. So we both gave him money, and he wrote 3 more strips, and then he disappeared again.
You know, I was thinking about the exact same comic like 2 seconds ago.
Yeah, Nick Yu of Bad Boys of Computer Science, if you're listening, I want my $5 back.
Not only don't I want my $1 back that I gave you. And, you know, you were supposed to make a comic for that $1, and you didn't. So, yeah get working.
So, probably our favorite webcomic, just hands down, is Penny Arcade.
I don't know. VVOCS could have lived up if it would have kept going.
Yeah, it could have.
Despite its much, much, much less artisticness.
But Penny Arcade is, I mean, this is undisputed, by and large, by orders of magnitude, or at least one order of magnitude, the most read webcomic in the world.
It's the king.
It is the number one webcomic. More people read it than any other webcomic.
With good reason.
Yeah, and you know what? It's probably one of my favorites.
It's my favorite webcomic. Absolutely.
I mean, it's very simple. The humor is often very strange or violent or revolving around the use of bad words.
Mm-hmm. The thing about Penny Arcade is that it's just the only comic of all the comics. Every single one of them is funny.
Yep.
There isn't one that is unfunny. Some are better than others. Not going to deny that. And some, you know, are about something that you care about more, a game you care about less, or something you're in touch with
but
more.
There are often multiple layers to the jokes. Like, there'll be a joke about, or there's one with a snowman. There's a joke about something, some video game, The Sims, that if you don't play video games, you wouldn't get. But there was also a very obvious, blatant, look, he put a penis on the snowman joke. It's scary that, I mean, we both started reading this, along with all of our friends, right about as we were freshmen in college.
You mean when the comic was pretty, almost brand new?
Yeah.
I think it was maybe 6 months to a year old at that point.
And I can think back to a Penny Arcade comic, and I can correlate it with a period in my college life.
It's hard to match the times up exactly. Like, sometimes you look and you're like, that comic's so recent. Oh my God, it's 2 years old! Oh my God!
But some are like, they're making fun of Tribes too. We bought that when it came out.
Oh, and I remember playing it, and I remember,
it was the best game ever.
And that comic is so right. All their comics are so right. One thing about Penny Arcade comics is that it was like a newspaper comic, right? It's like they have like an introduction at the beginning, then there's like a setup, and then there's a punchline. A Penny Arcade comic like doesn't have a beginning or an end. It's just the middle, you know? Like you'll see like violence about to happen in the final frame. Or, like, you'll see constant violence throughout the 3 frames.
Yep.
And there'll be a joke in each one. So, like, it'll be like, joke, joke, joke. But the 3rd one somehow also includes the 2. So it's like, instead of say something normal, say something normal. Something funny because of the 2 things. It's two funny things, and then a third thing that incorporates the first two things.
It's like each frame stands on its own as a joke, but the three of them together are greater than the sum of the three.
Yeah, and even and most of the time, you'll see that the thing they say in the third frame, the joke is actually in the non-existent fourth frame. Or somehow in the non-existent first frame. Like, you'll see Gabe come walking in with something stupid that already happened to him. You know, like he'll already be chewed up by a dog, and it's like, what happened to you?
Yep. Or also, you can't forget the ones where they show the end of the joke, and then the last frame is like Gabe and Tycho staring at each other in an awkward moment.
Yeah, when the facial expressions, especially on Gabe, whenever something funny happens.
There's the one when the hobo spiders came out.
When the hobo spiders, and he had a spider in his mouth and one in his eye, and the way his mouth was just this oval. It's just this oval. Like, he drew it. He must have drawn, I don't know, he probably drew it with his hand, but
yeah.
It looked like it was a perfect oval drawn and illustrated with two rows of, like, flat teeth in this tongue. And it was like, it was covered in spiders. Just looking at it, just cut the face out and put it somewhere with no text. It's just hilarious.
Now, the other one that we started reading at right about the same time, which used to be the most popular webcomic in the world, Megatokyo.
Oh, yeah.
Which was absolutely hilarious back when it was a four-panel comic about gaming.
You mean when it was Largo's comic?
Yeah, back when Largo was still on the comic. See, it was done by Fred Gallagher and Rodney Caston.
Rodney Caston.
And they had a falling out, and now it's just done by Fred Gallagher.
I think his site is like typercaston.com.
Something like that.
Because he thinks he's cool with the type R.
And I still read it, and it's a good comic. It's really well drawn. I mean, hands off to Fred for being an amazing artist. But
you know, actually, it's like, it looks really cool, but a lot of people I know that, like, it looks really cool to me.
Yeah.
You know, he draws, like, pencils and, like, you know, crazy detail as compared to, like, you know, a lot of manga that's in pencil. I mean, like, Death Note has better art, but, you know, maybe, you know, random Tokyo Pop manga number 3 doesn't.
Yeah.
But lots of art people I know always say that bad things about it. Like, all the girls look the same, and he doesn't do backgrounds very high quality, and a lot of times, like, the sizes of things are all off. Things you don't notice unless you're, like, an artist person.
Yeah, I can
unless
see that.
They're way, way off.
I mean, I still like the comic, but the only thing that bothers me is that it's not about gaming anymore, and it's kind of following this, like, stereotypical shoujo-y kind of, oh, girls and fanboys plot that...
The thing that bothers me is not so much the, is it, number one, the plot moves slowly, right? It's not the worst plot in the world, I mean, in terms of itself, but it is very slow, and they don't fill in a lot of details, and, like, if you don't know stuff, like, I didn't even know what was going on for the first half, because they were never really character introductions or developments or anything, you know? And then, the other thing that bothers me is, like, the plot itself is okay, but the message of the plot is, it's okay to be a fanboy, and it's very fanboy.
Feel sorry for fanboys, don't be mean to them.
Yeah, it's like, it should be, fanboy, get off your ass and stop being a stupid fanboy. Or
and
else,
take a shower.
Yeah,
take
or,
a shower.
Or else girls won't go with you. This is, girls should be all, oh, and liking fanboys, and you know, it's like, oh, just fanboy fan service of the most direct kind.
Now, see, I can always hope that he's not gonna, like, that's the direction he's going in, but then it'll kind of turn into a, oh, that was wrong, here's how it should be.
There's no chance, because he's a fanboy, and he makes, you know, he's drawing, like, his own fantasy world, and it's also the fantasy world of fanboys.
Possibly. I mean, I don't know him too well.
I talked to him once. Remember, he likes that canon stuff? I mean, come on. It's obvious. Everyone knows it.
Well, also the fact that we have a personal grudge with Megatokyo because they stole the joke Mosh Mosh Revolution from us.
I don't think he actually stole the
Not
idea.
Not him what specifically. Happened? This sounds silly, but this really happened.
Well, we were talking about this idea of Mosh Mosh Revolution, and some guy who thought he was all cool because he knew Fred. And he also,
Ken Hashimoto, a.k.a. The Blur.
The Blur, according to Largo, who called him The Blur. Overheard us, you know, making this random joke of Mosh Mosh Revolution.
And then sure enough, next week, Mosh Mosh Revolution was in Megatokyo.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty obvious that what happened was we were talking about it, and then Ken heard it and told it to Fred, maybe said it was his own idea, or just told it as a joke, or who even knows.
Yep.
But communicated that idea to him, and then Fred turned into a comic.
Though, even still, you can't deny the Mega Tokyo phenomena. Remember when the first Otakon they went to? The sheer number of people trying to get into that room to get a glimpse of those two guys.
Because the number of people, the kind of type of people are at Otakon are the type of people who read that comic.
Imagine if Gabe and Tycho went to Otakon.
Yeah, they were gonna once, and they didn't.
Yeah.
Instead, they went to the Baltimore Comic Con this year, where, like, no one went, and it was all quiet.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to Gabe and Tycho, even though you're probably not listening, imagine the Baltimore Comic Con where that entire convention center is filled to the brim with geeks.
I think the Baltimore Comic Con was in just one room of that convention center. Otakon is the only thing that uses the entire convention center. Every room in both buildings is absolutely full of geeks, geeks, geeks everywhere.
And that's not enough. They're making Baltimore build another convention center next to it to house more Otakon.
And if you had come that one year, you probably would have packed the largest room in that convention
center. Which seats, what, 9,000 people?
Something crazy like that, just to look at your ugly asses. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, to move on, I don't have a segue here, 8-Bit Theater.
Oh my God.
8-Bit Theater, when it started... was really dumb. Like, the first 6 or 7 comics were just the stupid sprite comic where a guy took pictures from Final Fantasy 1 and put speech bubbles on.
You know, I was never the biggest fan of Final Fantasy, and, like, when I was a freshman, everyone was like, oh, I read 8-Bit Theater, and I was like, oh, that's crap.
So I read the first few, and I was like, this is crap. And then I came back a month later, and there were a whole bunch more. And it evolved from crap sprite comic to probably one of the funniest things I've ever read in my life, shortly.
I mean, I came back when, like, Black Mage was cutting up, like, people in town. And it's like, he just, you know, he the guy always complains, or at least I've seen writing of his that says, man, I kind of don't like the sprite thing because I'm so limited. But he stretches, he's the only person of all the sprite comics who actually, you know, does things to the sprites to, like, stretch out their artistic possibilities, you know? Like, he throws in, like, pictures in the background, and, you know, he makes things all, like, shiny or, you know, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
The other thing is, I don't know how he did it, but he took these very inanimate sprites and gave each one of them such a unique and obvious personality that it's gotten to the point where if I play Final Fantasy 1, I see Fighter from the comic. I don't see Fighter from Final Fantasy 1. I don't see whatever fantasy
course.
I used to come up with when I played that game.
I mean, I used to play with a freaking black belt, but I can't do that now. You know? Speaking of black belt, he's in today's comic.
Yeah, he is.
The other thing, though, I've noticed about 8-Bit Theater is that it used to be where there would be, like, a zing in the final panel, right? Ever since the vernacular zing comic, there seem to be more zings per comic.
I like Zing.
It's just he's gotten better and better at coming up with these great, like, one-line hilarious things, and he just loads every comic up with them, and they're still funny, even if they might be repetitive. I hope that lasts.
Yep. Plus, I went to UberCon last year, and I actually had the privilege of meeting Brian Clevenger, and he's a cool guy.
Yeah. Imagine he's a cool guy. I've seen some stuff about him.
Yep. I thought when I first met him, like, I should ask him for a sketch, and I realized he does a sprite comic.
I don't know if I don't remember if he had drawing skills or not.
I'm pretty sure he does.
I think he was going to get drawing skills and then didn't because he went with the sprite comic and he was lazy.
You know what, though? I like the sprite comic.
Yeah. You need at least something that's, you know, different from the other stuff.
Now, we read Real Life, and it's not the best comic in the world, but I like it.
Yeah. It's definitely the content matter is important, the subject matter.
And, it's, you know, very geeky.
Yeah. And, you know, the guy comes up with just a geek joke, and, you know, but he's a really cool guy, even though I never met him. It's,
yeah,
like, you read the comic and you know all about this guy. And that's kind of the point. It's like, there's a cool geek somewhere, and now I know all his stuff.
Yep.
And, oh, his stuff is kind of like my stuff. Oh-ho.
It flows a lot like a newspaper comic. A good newspaper comic.
Yeah.
I don't know what else more I can say about it. I mean, it's just a generally good comic that I read every day.
Yeah.
Every day it updates.
You know what it's not as good as?
Huh?
Boasis.
Oh, God, Boasis.
Boasis, if Penny Arcade is the number one comic, Boasis is the number two comic with no argument
now,
at all.
Boasis seems weird because you look at it. It's called Boy on a Stick and Slither.
Boa,
a boy on a stick and a little snake.
I like how it comes out towards boa, snake. Get it? Ha ha. I don't think that was intended.
Might have been. You don't know.
Nah.
It's just a very... Half the time, it's very metaphorical and poignant, and half the time, it's just silly.
You know, I think even when it's being just silly, it still is trying to say something. It's just
trying to say something less important. I gotta tell you, though, I would have voted for Frickles Mudcat.
Oh my god, Frickles the Mudcat for president.
Because he gives peace several chances.
Several chances. You know, Boasis is just like... Instead of drawing... It's totally different from every other kind. He doesn't draw panels. He doesn't... You know, all he does is he has the stick and the snake standing next to each other, saying stuff.
And random surreal backgrounds. Yeah. Or sometimes God appears. He's a little...
God is a cloud with a bottle of beer and a cigarette and a lightning for a hand. And whenever God appears, you know that's a great comic because...
I don't know. I'm a fan of the Florida Cracker.
I don't like the Florida Cracker.
I don't like the Florida Cracker, but I know people like the Florida Cracker.
Yeah, the Florida Cracker could be more funny if he used him a little differently each time, instead of using him this kind of the same way.
Yeah.
So like every time the Florida Cracker appears, all he does is say, Florida Cracker people are stupid. Doesn't actually...
Of course, he did the same thing with that hippie character that he kind of hasn't used in a while.
You mean Nancy the Tooth?
Yeah.
Nancy the Tooth is never funny.
I don't know, it wasn't
That's
bad.
Why Nancy the Tooth doesn't appear anymore.
Though... Since we're moving toward the weird comics, we'll move toward probably the weirdest comic. A lesson is learned, but the damage is irreversible.
It's not the weirdest comic.
I think it's probably the weirdest comic I read.
Okay, maybe the weirdest one you read, but it's not the weirdest comic at all. There's plenty of weird freaking comics out there.
It's very odd and very interestingly drawn, and I never would have found it except a friend of mine who is actually also a webcomic artist. Pointed it to us one day.
Well, he draws it differently every time.
Yeah.
Is the thing.
Like every comic, it updates randomly as far as I can tell. And every comic is completely different.
Yep. It's like sometimes they'll have like this really nice painted art and then they'll have this kind of splotchy kind of thing going on that looks like it was like, you know, I don't know the word for it. Sometimes they'll have like very few colors. Sometimes it'll be crazy colors all over the place. Sometimes we panel, sometimes it's just like this kind of like swooshy kind of shape going
on. And sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's very metaphorical, sometimes it's nothing. Sometimes the comic will just go, and then it ends, and you're just left hanging with a sense of, why did I read that? Nothing happened.
Yeah.
But it was still very pretty, and you still feel good about reading it.
Some of them I just didn't really feel anything. It was like, what was that? I don't know.
Yeah, I like it though.
Yeah, it's not something that I check. But if there's a new one, it's worth the 10 seconds it takes to read the page.
Yeah. Of course, there's always the Perry Bible Fellowship,
which
has nothing to do with Bibles.
Hilarious.
Imagine The Far Side, only a little bit darker in terms of what it's about.
And like 3 or 4 panels.
Yeah.
But it's still always good.
Everyone's different, and it also updates randomly, but...
I think it updates semi-weekly, I think, was the rule.
I have
idea.
His site has very little text and a lot of
The
pictures.
Site's very badly designed as a site. The comics make it worth suffering.
It's very creative, though. It seems like he knew what he was doing HTML-wise. He just made it weird on purpose.
I think he's just more of an artist and not a web guy.
That's excusable because his comic is great.
I'm definitely great. Weeaboo?
Weeaboo.
I mean, his comic made, like, you know, the 100 coolest internet things ever list. Remember that I did couple podcasts ago? It was my thing of the day. His comic, Weeaboo, was on there.
It is. So there's one I read, and you don't read it, called College Roomies from Hell.
Isn't that just some dumb drama crap?
It's awesome. It's been going on for freaking ever, and I've been reading it since before I really knew about webcomics. I've been reading this comic.
Yeah, well, Bob and George has been going on for freaking ever. That doesn't make it any better.
So you're admitting that Bob and George wasn't funny.
It was funny at some point.
See, College Roomies from Hell is just, it's neat, partly because it's a very dialogue-driven, character-driven comic, and the plot, it's kind of hard to explain, it's just weird. And it's been going on for so long that the only way to really understand it is to start from the beginning and read until you catch up, and then read it, because it updates every day. And just a couple of panels of character-driven comedy drama. But the main thing that is going for it is the, you know, the zings in 8-bit theater? Times a million, and that's what almost all the dialogue is in this comic.
it seems like all the plot isn't really like an intelligent,
it's not supposed to be
plot. It's like a waste of time to read plot.
No, the plot is silly. And it doesn't matter because all that matters are the characters. And the characters are fantastic. Well, you don't like anything good, so...
Yeah, okay.
It's weird. I've got a lot of emotional investment in these characters. Just because I've been reading for so long and the characters are so well-developed. Kind of like 8-Bit Theater, how the characters are so well-defined and well-developed.
I read at least one more webcomic. Perhaps one of the most recently discovered and most hilarious webcomics there is.
Oh, God. There's the new comic we just discovered, Dr. McNinja.
That's not it, but that's a good one.
Dr. McNinja is about a ninja doctor, and that sounds stupid. You know what? It is stupid. But you know what else? It's still awesome.
It's very awesome. It's kind of like got that Space Ghost humor going on, you know?
That's probably the best way to describe it.
I think it is exactly Space Ghost humor, which I like. Some people don't like it. If you don't like Space Ghost, you probably won't like Dr. McNinja, but...
It's probably the only Space Ghost humor I get anymore. I don't see Space Ghost anymore.
I don't think Space Ghost is on anymore, but there's... I think there's still at least one or two shows on, like, Adult Swim at some random time that are like it. I don't know. I don't watch TV. It's just a guess.
Are there DVDs of Space Ghost?
Yeah, they put Space... I think the first and second seasons might be out on DVD.
I think we should get all on that.
Get all Netflix in that house.
Yeah, if we put in our Netflix queue now, we'll see him 2 years from now.
Of course, that's not the comic that I was originally referring to, but
right.
You were correct in that it was the most recently discovered one.
All right.
The second most recently discovered one.
Order of the Stick.
Is infinitely more hilarious than...
It is a comic about a Dungeons & Dragons campaign, and it is full of jokes about Dungeons & Dragons and rules in Dungeons & Dragons. However, even if you have never played Dungeons & Dragons, it's still just as funny.
Yeah, my favorite comic is still the one where they walk into the town, and it's like, adventurers are coming, and they start boarding up the town like the adventurers are going to blow it up, which, you know, is what you would normally think. And then, oh, they're trying to sell things to the adventurers at inflated prices because they're loaded with gold. But the adventurers love the small towns, and it implies that all the small towns do this, and it's hilarious. But the thing about the best part jokes in Order of the Stick that I like is, unlike Red Mage, who is just like this kind of blatant, I am tweaking guy, is like they metagame in the comic. But since you never see the piece, you never see the actual people playing these characters, you just see the characters the whole time. It's like, you know, wizard's walking around and he's like, oh, I'm out of spells. What do I do? Or, like, you'll see this, like, bard, like, oh, I know, I'll use my song to distract them out. And then he sings a song like, you know, bash down the door, bash down the door, you can do it, bash down the door. And it doesn't actually help him bash down
the
door.
That was the greatest. I think the only really funny one with that kind of joke was when he's singing the song to help the other guy move stealthily. Sneak, sneak, sneak past the guards. Hope they don't hear you sneaking.
Yeah.
It's a good comic.
It's very excellent. I definitely anticipate it greatly every three times a week, but I don't know. The guy seems to update later in the day now, recently. Yeah.
Now, one comic I used to read of all the old, huge comics, but it ended quite a while ago, was Exploitation Now, which was insanely popular, and it was just funny and goony, and it was really good.
I was not a fan.
Yeah, but
it was too
everyone else
dirty.
Was a fan. It was dirty.
I'm not a fan
of
the...
It wasn't as dirty as Thin H Line, but it was dirty.
I'm not a fan of the dirty comics.
But then Michael Poe ended it, and now he's doing a new comic called Errant Story, which is a semi-manga-styling fantasy, and it's comedy/drama, and it's not dirty like Exploitation Now was. And you know what? It's just a really good, solid story, and the art is most excellent. And that was Geek Nights with Rem and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for the opening music.
Thanks for listening. Please remember to point your favorite podcatcher at feeds.feedburner.com/geeknights to get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Also, please visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com for the latest updates and forum discussions. And whether you love or hate our podcast, we won't know unless you send your feedback to us at geeknights@gmail.com.